Hello, and welcome to all of you joining us today. I'm Karen Shapiro, a vice president at Partners for Progressive Israel, an American nonprofit organization dedicated to the achievement of a durable and just peace between the state of Israel and its neighbors, which includes an end to Israel's occupation. We support Israelis working to ensure civil rights, equality, and social justice for all of Israel's inhabitants as Partners promotes a just Israeli society. Today's webinar is the first organized by Partners' newly formed Women's Initiative, an endeavor that focuses on sharing the voices of women from Palestine, Israel, and the global Jewish diaspora. Our aim is to open doors to new perspectives and innovative solutions, deconstruct assumptions while challenging outdated narratives, and seek to infuse hope into unresolved conditions. The Women's Initiative will shine a bright light on the rich experiences we women have in all walks of life. In addition, I want to give a shout out to our co-sponsor, the National Council of Jewish Women. Thank you. We are grateful for your support. Partners for Progressive Israel is glad to be bringing this webinar to all of you for free. If you like it and want more programming like this, we invite you to our website at progressiveisrael.org. And please, while you're there, make a contribution. In today's inaugural Women's Initiative webinar, we are honored to have Tamar Zandberg and Rida Rinawi Zoabi in conversation. Now to introduce our panelists. Tamar Zandberg is a former chair of merits and has represented the party in the Knesset since 2013. She is actively involved on issues of human rights, sustainable planning, urbanism, affordable housing and rent, natural resources, sustainable transportation, religious pluralism, women's rights, and cannabis decriminalization. She is currently the chairwoman of the Committee of Women's Rights, a member of the Finance Committee, the Affordable Housing Committee, and the Interior and Environment Committee. Tamar was behind an initiative to introduce public transport on Shabbat and is active in the Israeli movement to support Palestinian statehood. A former Tel Aviv-Yafo City Council member, Tamar is a lifelong social and feminist activist. Rida Rinawi Zoabi comes from a rich background of work in strategic consulting, organization development, and community activism with special attention to women's rights. Rida was the founding executive director of INJAS Center for Professional Arab Local Governments, a post she had held since 2008. She has an MBA in impact investment, an alumni of the Oxford Said Business School Impact Measurement Program, and was director of ACTO, the Academic Center for Impact Investing and Entrepreneurship at the Management College. Rida was included on the 2018 Forbes Israel list of the most influential women in Israel. And our moderator for today's conversation is Judy Maltz, the diplomatic correspondent of Haaretz, a position she assumed 2 months ago. Prior to that, she served for 8.5 years as senior correspondent for the English edition of Haaretz, covering a wide range of topics with special focus on the Jewish world and Israel diaspora relations. Judy has written for the Jerusalem Post, the Jerusalem Report, and Globes, the Israeli business newspaper. She began working at Haaretz more than 30 years ago as an economic correspondent in Jerusalem and was one of the founders of the paper's English language print edition. In 2014, she was the recipient of the B'nai B'rith World Center Award for Excellence in Journalism. Please note, there will be a Q&A in about a half hour. Please, as you have questions, write them in the Q&A section at the bottom of Zoom. As you can see, Rida's driving and unfortunately must leave us 15 minutes early. Tamar can be with us till the end. The life of being in the midst of election. So we're grateful to have them both. And take it away, Judy. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to all of you out there. I don't know exactly where you're watching this from. So I thought I'd start with a question for Tamar that is relevant to the theme of this evening, the Women's Initiative. And here's my question, Tamar. Israelis head to the polls again for the fourth time in less than 2 years on March 23rd. Would it be fair to say, based on recent polls, that at least one good thing has come out of this election so far, that it looks like we're going to have way more women in the upcoming Knesset than we had in the outgoing one? Would you say that for that alone, it was worth calling another election? And how do you explain the fact that in terms of female representation in the Knesset, Israel seems to have regressed in recent years?
Yes, so it is true that the next Knesset is about to have more women than the living one. But it doesn't make me that happy because the sitting Knesset right now actually regressed, actually went back from, we had for, I think at least 30 years, a growing number of women from Knesset to Knesset. And in the last Knesset, it stopped and even set back a little bit. And nevertheless, during all those years, we never crossed one third of the Knesset being women. So we had a record number of 33 or 34, which is less than 30% of the 120 Knesset members. So I think that in the 21st century, taking pride that less than 30% women representation that represent at least 50% of the Israeli, like the world public, it's not something to take pride in, unfortunately. Nevertheless, it's a good thing that to be on the track of growth again, instead of continuing the backlash. So in that respect, I hope that we will improve from now on. I do see that unlike previous campaigns, it is an issue for parties. I mean, you see even right-wing parties, I don't know, for Meretz, it is a long time regulation, internal regulation in our, canon, I don't know the word in English, to have at least 40% of our list or...
The bylaws, I think.
Yeah, we do have 50% in the first 10 in these elections. But I'm happy to say that other parties went in our way, including Lapid, including Gideon Saar, that they made it a point to have women in the high on their list. So that is something that I think also merit is for us to be proud of, because like many other issues, this is also something that we were ahead of everybody decades or years for. But I don't think I will not be happy until we will come close to 50%. I think it's a minimum criteria in the 2021.
Yeah, I guess you could say that one of the inbred problems is that we have two ultra-Orthodox Haredi parties that usually get 15, 16 seats together. And these are two parties that, as a matter of principle will not allow women to run on their list. So, you know, where it's always catching up, I guess. It may be hard to ever get close to 50% when you have to deal with that.
Yes, it is true that no matter how represented we will be on the Democratic Liberal parties, the fact that at least two, and actually in the last Knesset, even the Islamic Party, previously part of the joint list, but now running independently, had a woman, a Muslim woman, and a religious, traditional woman representing them. Now she's deteriorated a bit back. She's in the fifth place. On the other hand, we have Raida here on the webinar that is representing Meretz, which is a great pride for us. But you are right that the two ultra-religious, ultra-Orthodox parties are banned from, like women are banned from being on the list. And that, of course, will never bring us close to equality when this is the situation.
Right, right. And you were just mentioning the joint list, which had four women, has four women in the Knesset at the moment, in this outgoing Knesset. And Raida, so I want to ask you this. If Meretz gets in on March 23rd, and we hope
not that, if, when?
When Meretz gets in, you are assured a spot because you're number four on the party list, and any party gets in automatically gets a minimum of four people into the Knesset. But that would make you a very rare, in fact, almost unprecedented example of an Arab woman serving in a non-majority Arab party. Why has it taken this long to happen?
Well, I think that, I want to tap back on what Tamar had just said regarding women in public sphere, in a political sphere, in the world, globally, also in America or in Europe, women are pushing through to get into the political public sphere. The numbers in the States, on the Senate at least, is not also, we're not getting to the 50%. I think that the setback that we had in the last 2 years within Israel in general of having less women representing within the Knesset is something to do also somewhere of a fear of coming from the male politicians saying that okay we need to have more representatives coming from, you know, from the army, from more of the macho perspective. Regarding the Arab political sphere, and this is something that it has a lot also to resemble the ultra-Orthodox Haredi political sphere. I wish to focus on one indication that could give us some sort of a projection towards the future. If you look at the municipal political sphere, you can see that more and more women are getting into politics within the municipal on the local level, whether it's on the ultra-Orthodox or in the Arab local municipalities. In fact, I will give you one example. In 2009, it was a long time ago. There were only 10 women, Arab women, that tried to get into the municipal council to be elected, and all of them failed. But in 2019. 10 years after, 130
Arab women that tried to be elected within the municipal elections. Some of them failed, some of them succeeded, but I think that this is a true indication of an evolution that is starting to happen on the political local level, but I'm sure that it will also translate in the coming years on the national level. Regarding my position specifically, because Judy asked, I'm proud to be part of Meretz, because Meretz for me has very, very strong values that I not only care for, but I have been activists and very, very vocal within all my adult life, which are social justice, solidarity, and activism, equality between Arab Palestinian citizens of the state of Israel and Jewish citizens of the state. So these are the things that I believe in, and I'm really, really happy that and proud, of course, that Meretz in the first five elected within the list, we have two Arabs and we have two women, and I think this is the most political party that truly represents what's happening in Israel in general.
Now, as you mentioned, Raida, you are a veteran peace activist, but making peace between Israelis and Palestinians hardly seems to be on the agenda of any political party these days. Do you think that Israelis simply don't care anymore? And what do you believe needs to happen for peace to become an issue again?
Sorry, this is a question for me or for Tamar? I couldn't hear
you. For you, Raida, for you.
Okay, so I think that, of course, if you ask regarding the Arab community in Israel, the Arab citizens of the state of Israel, our minds, hearts, and souls are attached with our brothers and sisters, Palestinians living in the occupied territories. But I think that, and this is something that you can see throughout the whole spectrum on the political level. But on the other hand, in the last years, I think that there are several changes that are happening within our own society. One is that the issue of citizenship and the question of what does it mean to be an Israeli is something that has been in the last 5 or 6 years has been very, very vibrant. And I will give you one example. The political map in Israel in general currently is a very, very it's clearly a map of a politics of identity. You have a political party for the Arabs and for the Russian speakers and for the ultra-Orthodox, etc., etc. But what I think that for a lot of Israelis, whether they are Arabs or Jews, the question of what does it mean for you to be an Israeli that goes beyond your national part of your identity, this is something that is starting to be an issue. For us Palestinian Israelis, the question of what does it mean for you to be a Palestinian, I think that for most of us it's something that is very, very natural. When we go and we eat in the restaurant in Ramallah, for example, we feel we feel like it's part of us and we're part of this. But what does it mean to be an Israeli that goes beyond us paying the taxes and voting to the Knesset is something that is a very, very tricky question. And I don't think that we really can find yet an answer. But if you go and ask a lot of Israeli Jews, what does it mean to be an Israeli that goes beyond your Jewish part of your identity? I think that for a lot of people, this question is very, very difficult for them. So I think that merit as an idea, and as the leader of a strong left politics, is the only political party that is talking about this how can I say, it's like a second floor. If you have the first floor of politics of identities, you have a second floor, and on this second floor you can see that this is where we can talk about citizenship and civil identity that goes beyond the national part of our identity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Before I start with my next question, which is for you, Tamar, I just want to remind viewers that please feel free to ask questions. You can click on the Q&A button below on your screens and submit your questions there. And we have devoted a certain period at the end of the session for the Q&A session. Tamar, many in Israel question the wisdom of having two separate parties representing the left, Labor and Meretz. The fear is obviously that one or both of them won't cross the electoral threshold, making it a lot easier for Netanyahu to form yet another government. And there was, in fact, a poll last night on Channel One that showed that if elections were held today, Meretz would not cross that threshold. So what, if any, differences are there really today between Labor and Meretz? And do you regret not joining forces? Because by now it's already too late to do that.
Okay, so first of all, I cannot imagine a reality in which Meretz will not be represented in the Knesset. And I think that in these days when the students of Kahana are brought back to the Knesset in the mere hands of Prime Minister Netanyahu, the idea that the party of Shulamit Aloni will not be represented in the Knesset is unbearable, and I don't think that the Israeli public will let such thing to happen. I do think that Labor and Meretz are both very old and prominent parties, both important. There are differences. Meretz is a very clear, progressive, liberal, left-wing party that is very loyal to its not only ideology, but also to its politics. Meretz is the only party that was never a part of Netanyahu's government or any right-wing government, unlike many other parties, even some of them in the bloc, like Labor, like Yesh Atid, like others. And I also think that we joined forces with Labor, and before that with Ehud Barak. We did that in the last 2 years. We were very responsible, and we were actually hurt. I think that move did not prove itself. And I think this audience saw me and many of us in the last three election campaigns calling for any kind of unifications, and it lost us power in our representation. And it also hurt our credibility when our partners like Orly Levy, like Amir Peretz, like Itzik Shmuli went in the Netanyahu's government, and we know the rest of it. And now both of them are out of the Knesset, and Meretz is still here standing. And I think Meretz will continue representing those values way after many other parties will not be even part of the map. So I think that we are not happy to be small. We want to be, of course, bigger. But I think this is also a wake-up call for a lot of left-wing supporters just tell them, you know, go and vote Meretz. Otherwise, there is a slight possibility that Meretz will not be part of the Knesset, and that is a very bad reality, and we don't want that to happen.
Well, kind of following up on what you just said, and I would like Raida to weigh in on this next question as well. In previous elections, Meretz has always ruled out joining a government led by the right wing and preferred to stay in opposition. But in recent days, I heard Yair Golan, who's number three on your list, say he would be prepared to join a government headed by Gideon Saar's New Hope Party, which is the kind of right-wing alternative to Likud. And many would even say it's more right-wing than Likud. And if I'm not mistaken, Tamar, you actually didn't rule out this idea either. So would you support joining a right-wing government if that is the only way to oust Netanyahu?
Okay, so as I said, Meretz is a left-wing party, and we will not sit in a full right-wing government. So, of course, if Netanyahu will form a government, we will not be there because of the corruption indictments. We will also not sit with the Kahanists. And we won't sit in a right-wing government. But there are many other options. Some of them include some of the parties you mentioned. You know that Meretz used to cooperate, and we were part of the Rabin's government. That was the Ch'as was part of it, and we also got criticism for that, by the way. But we thought that taking the Ministry of Education, for example, and sending the best ministers of education in the history of Israel from Meretz was more important than having a full agreement or identity between all parts of coalition. We will, of course, be willing to do that again, but that depends on the election outcomes. Who will form the government? What will be the basic lines on which the government will form? We will, of course, support a government that will pursue peace, that we will be able to influence in ministers that we care about, for example, education and others. We cannot rule out right now. The only things that we rule out is Netanyahu because of the indictment, the Kahanists, and of course we will not be a part if all the government will be right-wing parties, and we will not be the small, annex of left. But there are many other options where the center-left can be big and influential in the government. And we will, of course, will not prevent ourselves from influence, because this is the reason you go to politics. You want to influence, you want to be a part of government. And by the way, if you are not, being a part of the opposition is also something that we are proud of. Unlike other parties that, coalition and government is above everything, is also about their ideals and their values. That's not the case for us.
Raida, are you on the same page with Tamar on this issue?
Well, I think that one of the strengths of Meretz, which is a very, very veteran political party coming from three decades, is that Meretz has its own principles. And these principles had, because of the fact that throughout the years, Meretz did not lay these principles out, and in fact strengthening that strength Meretz and kept it safe throughout the years. I think that there are, in politics you have a lot of scenarios, and you mentioned one scenario, but I'm sure that there are a lot of other scenarios. When we talk about Shatid, and when we talk about, there are a lot of scenarios that can be actual and realistic. The issue is that, you know, Tamar mentioned that Merit, in fact, sent the greatest ministers of education. You know, now currently, you know, I'm campaigning and I'm driving the whole Galilee and going through and through with a lot of within a lot of you know, activists, Arab activists in the field. And what I'm constantly hearing all the time is people saying that 20 years ago and 15 years ago, the best ministers of education that really served the periphery, the socioeconomic periphery, the educational system, the Arab community, are Merit's ministers. And this is something that is really, you know, it's heartwarming, but also I think that this is the case. This is our principle that we want to influence from within, and we want to build a strong coalition, ministers that can truly fight the fight for social justice and equality within Israel.
I have another question for both of you. One of the remarkable developments we've witnessed in the recent campaign has been Netanyahu's outreach to Arab voters. For the first time in as long as I can remember, he's actually visiting Arab cities and towns and holding campaign events there. Many have charged that this is pure cynicism and that Netanyahu has no genuine interest in promoting Arab society. And we know how he made some very racist remarks against Arab society in past election campaigns. Still, a recent poll by the Israel Democracy Institute found that 25% of Arab citizens in the country feel they should cooperate with him. I wonder how you explain this new romance between Netanyahu and at least parts of Arab society.
Okay, I will take that first, Tamar, if you please.
Yeah, sure.
This is fake news. This is fake news mainly because of the fact that no one within the Arab voters believe Benjamin Netanyahu prime minister, because prime minister Benjamin Netanyahu for 13 years, he still is prime minister. His political party, his government did not have any solid improvement for the Arab community in Israel. In fact, our situation deteriorated in issues of personal security, in issues of housing, in issues of education, employment, you name it, we're in the bottom of the bottom in every socioeconomic level. You said it, Judy, the fact that for 13 years, Mr. Benjamin Netanyahu didn't visit one Arab city or village. And now, in a very, very cynicist move, he's now had remembered that, okay, I have 20% of voters that are Arabs. Okay, I will visit in 1 month four different Arab villages and towns. It's like an amazing to what extent he thinks the Arab voter is stupid. And I'm telling you, the Arab voter are clever enough to understand that this is fake news.
Tamar?
Yes, if I can just add, I think, of course, Raida is an expert to her own community. But I can add, as an expert to Netanyahu and to Israeli politics, that this will not be the first time that Netanyahu is going to a very, very cynical campaign that has nothing behind it. And thinking that the Israeli public is stupid or naive, and finding out that this is not the case, and the campaigns are either just fade or break or just collapse. So I take Raida's word that this will happen this time in the so-called Arab campaign, when Prime Minister Netanyahu find out that his incitement has reached too far, and he has actually alienated half the Israeli population, not only from the Arab minority, but also left-wing people and people who care about democracy and oppose corruption. His prime ministership is actually in danger. So this is when he decided that he is actually pro-unity and he loves everybody and so on and so forth. We will not forget the last 10 years. And of course, I'm sure that what Raida said is also valid, that the Israeli Arab citizens will also not forget how he incited against them for so many years, and thinking that they might forget it now.
Judy, if I might add to what Tamar said, and I totally agree, of course, with her analysis of the general public in Israel. I will tell you, a very, very personal experience with the Prime Minister's office. In 2013, when all the violence and aggression started to be a very, very painful issue within our own community, me as the head of an NGO working with Arab local governance, plus several mayors, had participated in a meeting with the Prime Minister in the Knesset, and he in 2013 promised the Arab community in Israel that today I will fight for the security within the Arab villages and towns, and nothing happened since then. In 2015, we had I personally with my team with the mayors within our own community had prepared a plan for the issue of aggression and violence within our own community. It was prepared with a budget to be included in this big plan of 922, and the ministries did not accept to include this budget in this budget line. So what I'm saying is that on a regular basis, the Prime Minister had promised and failed to come through with his word.
I think we're going to start with questions now from our viewers. And I will, the following question, which comes from Tony in London, I'm going to ask you, Raida, because I know you have to leave. He asks, what do you think of encouraging Israel to choose between recognizing a Palestinian state imminently or extending equal right to everyone under Israel's jurisdiction until there is a solution?
I think that it goes both ways. I think that occupation is not only that it is a true problem for Palestinian people, and that their aim, the Palestinian people under the occupied territories' major aim is to have the Palestinian state. But I think that occupation is a poison that is eating internally our own society, our own communities, and occupation. It has, when you look at the political discourse that is filled with hatred, filled with racism. It goes back to the issue of occupation. So I think that if we continue working on both processes, then we can find a true solution, a sustainable solution. My dream is to be in a point where, young people from Nazareth or from Emel Fahim going to demonstrate against occupation in Tel Aviv, and that they do that not only because of their feeling towards the Palestinian people, but that they do that also because of their responsibility as citizens of the state of Israel. And this is something that I'm working towards, making sure that more and more young people from our community start taking responsibility over their own Israeli citizenship.
One more question for you. Can you talk about the Palestinian Arab undecided voter? What are their calculations of who to vote for or if to vote at all?
I think that in general, people, the Arab voters are tired. They're tired of three things. One, they are tired of because now we are going into the fourth election, because of the fact that sadly, the Prime Minister Netanyahu had led us into this chaos, political chaos. People are tired because of the fact that, in addition to politics, we deal with a very, very, very difficult situation of violence. We have a rate of killings, people shooting at each other, seven times more than the general average in Israel. So it's like a war in our own towns and villages. And in general, people are tired because of all the COVID-19 and the economical effect on it. And on that issue, I'm sure that people want to hear more of a rational voice representing their own dreams, but also representing their own, on a daily life matters. And this is something that we in Meretz are really capable. I'm sure that for Meretz in general, but also for us, Esau Frej and I, as number four and number five, we're coming from the field. We're coming from working with the Arab towns and villages on a daily basis, and we know how to work inside the political system, whether it's on the local or the national level. I need to just to get to where I to have to go. I have another meeting now. I'm sorry that I have to leave the meeting. I'm very, very thankful for you inviting me. And inshallah, we can succeed. I'm sure that we can succeed.
Thank you for joining us. And tomorrow, you have no problem with taking the rest of the questions that we have here? Good night, Raida. Good luck.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye. So Tamar, here's a question. Someone is asking, actually this was for both of you, but I'm sure you can answer it. Campaigning together in person is not an option in the pandemic, but are there ways that the two of you could present joint issues, emphasize an alliance? And if so, what would be these issues? And would they include women's concerns?
Yes, definitely. First of all, campaigning together is definitely one of the challenges, but it's also one of the advantages that we try to emphasize. The first five on the Meretz list are very mixed, Jewish and Arab, men and women. So we are very proud of that, and we certainly mean to emphasize that on the campaign. Last week we visited Tamra, where an innocent student was killed in a mutual gunfire between the police and the organized crime in a tragedy that hit the entire country and especially the Arab community. So Nitzan Horovitz and Raida and myself and Isawi Fred, we went there together. And I think it was very powerful for the community to accept condolences, not only from the Arab representatives, but also from the chair of the party, from us as Jewish Knesset members. And I think this is one of the strengths that the Meretz list has to offer. And we definitely mean to emphasize that. And of course, the women's issues will be in the heart of that, both in the Jewish and in the Arab community, because we are now in a very severe crisis under coronavirus and COVID, not only in terms of health and the pandemic, but also in terms of the social economic situation that women are hurt at the most. And I think it concerns both Jewish and Arab women. And I think Raida and myself, like the conversation that we have here tonight, is a good cooperation. And also Raida is a very new and interesting candidate. And I think many are very interested to hear what has to say, like you were this evening.
Okay, someone, here's a question that we touched on before. This woman would like to hear about some of the ideological differences between Meretz and Avodah under the leadership of Meirav Micha'eli. And I guess I'm assuming that what she means here is that Meirav Micha'eli is probably more progressive than Yitzhak Rabin or some of the former leaders than of the Labour Party. And Meretz does bill itself as a very progressive left-wing party. So is this more competition having someone like Meirav Micha'eli at the helm of Labour?
First of all, I think that Meirav Micha'eli is an important Knesset member, and I'm friendly with her. I think that it's not about this or that specific person, but it's about the ideas and the instrument or the framework of each party. I think Meretz has proved itself for over 30 years to be the most accountable, the most trustworthy, the most left-wing, and the most progressive, and very, very coherent and clear on its ideas, even when Labour was not so, and maybe in the future when Labour will not be so again. I think there are room for both parties. I think the competition so-called is less in reality than in some of the, you know, political talks in the last few days. I respect Labour, I respect Meirav, but I think Meretz has no competition and no replacement in Israeli politics. Mm-hmm.
Here's a question from Germany, a more general question about the Israeli political scene. I have followed Israeli and Palestinian politics for more than 20 years. As for Israeli elections, each time you find totally new parties or parties that join with other parties, is this a symptom of disorientation? Or is this a desire for a so-called Messiah who can solve many problems? What does this tell us?
Yes, I think that for many years, forming new parties or recruiting new candidates as the stars from the sky was definitely a symptom of Israeli politics. I'm actually satisfied to say that at least in our camp, in the center left, maybe after the collapse of blue and white that maybe brought it to a record and collapsed very quickly and very intensely short after, maybe there is some kind of even mature, I would say, a more mature approach Right now we see the three parties that are part of this camp for a decade, and that is Yesh Atid, Meretz, and Labor. We don't see any new party. We saw a lot of new party, you know, Otto Shelach called the party, and Ron Huldai, and it was a turmoil for a while, but then most of them quit and did actually the responsible thing and left the more prominent and based parties on the map. And I think this is the way things should go and should be. And this is why I'm not so worried about the competition like we talked before, because I think there is room for these three parties. And I think the three of them will be a part of also a bloc after the elections in trying to form a government and many other steps to come.
We have someone here asking, what is Meretz's platform and message on economic issues this election?
Yes, so Meretz has a long time message, being a social democrat message, supporting increased governmental responsibility over the social services, of course, welfare, but also housing, education, transportation, etc. I think this is even stressed more in times of crisis, where I think many of the countries around the world, including the US, are now realize that the government is the only body or institution that is even able to deal with the crisis in that magnitude and provide the safety net and even the stimulus money that is needed to both save and compensate the citizens in times of crisis and also get out of it in the end of it. I think that now we see that the education system, for example, that now in recent days is a huge debate in Israel. Israel is very low on the tables of how many days the education system was open since March 2020, since the beginning of this crisis. And I think Israel and Mexico are the last ones in the global measuring in the days that schools were open in the last year. And I think this is this very shameful index goes to show both on the very bad management of the crisis in the education system during the pandemic, but also in a long investment problem way back, because now when social distance is the name of the game, when you have classrooms of 30, 35, 38 students with one teacher, of course, it is not possible to keep social distancing or small groups. And the illness of the Israeli education system, we now see it when times are challenging. So I think the long time social democratic platform of Meretz now prove itself even more. And I think we should be able also to gain votes for that because this is the right thing that is now revealed.
One of our viewers would like you to comment on Meretz's stand on climate change.
Yeah, so this is also one of our issues as a progressive party. I think that the coronavirus also revealed something that I think in the US is part of the political debate for the last 4 years of the Trump administration. Of how, fake news, conspiracy theories, denying science and climate change and climate crisis and also the COVID pandemic can be actually dangerous. Sometimes it can endanger human lives and can put even the mere idea of the democracy and constitution in danger, like we saw last month in the Capitol. I think that some of these hints or ideas are spread worldwide and also reached Israel in some of the issues, not all of them. But of course, climate change is one of them. And the fact that climate change under Trump has become for itself something that is, you know, under question or not a scientific fact is a danger to actually worldwide. Meretz here is on the global progressive stand that takes the climate crisis very, very seriously, that put on the table green legislation and trying to, that Israel will meet its global commitment to decreasing the emits to the air and everything that that needs to be done. Israel was part of the Paris agreement that I'm glad President Biden is now returning to. And Meretz here, of course, is the leading party in the taking climate change seriously and proposing policies to deal with it.
One final question, and I think this kind of is a good kicker. Meretz is such an important voice in Israeli politics, but you have not been able to get the votes we would like you to get. Are you doing anything different from past elections? How do you think you need to change your strategy? It seems like the same strategy each election is not winning.
Yes, first of all, well, thank you very much. I think it's a very important question, and I think we are now 40 days before election, and it's very appealing to talk about strategy. But I think that in politics, and especially after the last 2 years in Israel, we learned that politics does not start with strategy. It starts with ideology and with your values. And, you know, one thing that we learned that even small, standing on your values is more important than anything, because even big parties would come. But ideology will prevail and will stay and will survive even the hard times. So being Meretz and being so committed to your ideology, it's very hard to talk about strategy because, you know, we will not change our nature. We will not change our positions. And even if many Israelis would choose for some reason or the other to vote to other parties, we will not change ourselves because this is the truth that we believe in. Having said that, you know, this is politics and we have to win the vote. And I think that we have been a victim of some political processes for many years now. I think that the Bibi, no Bibi situation kind of distorts political map in Israel. I think that sometimes also Meretz has to evolve and change by itself. There are many things to take into consideration, but I think that in the fourth election campaign in 2 years, we also have to take a moment and mention and respect those who are loyal to their values and put them in a higher place than, you know, strategy. Because, you know, Gantz had a strategy and he succeeded. And then, you know, when you don't have conscience that leads you, you know, all the strategy in the world and all the advisors and all the campaign managers will not help you get there. And I think this is something on you know, to take into consideration about Meretz and appreciate this time.
Thank you, Tamar. Karen, do you have some closing remarks?
Yes, okay. I do. Thank you, Judy. Thank you, Tamar. And of course, thank you, Rida, for this engaging discussion, conversation. I admire your values, Tamar, and how Meretz has held true to them all of these years. Thanks to everyone who has joined us for this first Women's Initiative webinar and for your questions. I also want to thank the National Council of Jewish Women for co-sponsoring this event. And thank you to my collaborators, Ayala and Marcia, and to the staff of Partners for Progressive Israel, Dinesh, Julie, and Ron, for keeping us going. We hope you've enjoyed this webinar. We are glad to be bringing this program to all of you for free. If you want to learn more about our upcoming programming, please visit our website at progressiveisrael.org. And please, while you are there, make a contribution. That is what enables us to bring programs like this to you at no cost. Again, thank you, Judy. Thank you, Tamar. And everyone, please stay safe, be well, and may Meretz do quite well in the upcoming election. We are rooting for you.
Thank you so much.
And here to help you in any way.
Support means the world to us. Thank you.